19-year-old Tara Calico left her home in Belen, New Mexico, to go for her daily bike ride along State Road 47. Calico tells her mother to come looking for her if she doesn't return by 12 p.m., explaining that she has plans later in the day. When 12 o'clock comes and Tara doesn't arrive home, her mother takes a drive down State Road 47, but can find no trace of Tara. Police are contacted, and after a sweep of the area, they discover pieces of Tara's Sony Walkman and a cassette tape. Several witnesses report spotting Tara riding along the way, but none witnessed the incident surrounding her disappearance. Of these witnesses, several report that a light-colored pickup truck with a camper shell appeared to be following her. 8 months later, a Polaroid photo of a young woman and a boy, both bound and gagged with tape over their mouths, is found in a parking lot in Port St. Joe, Florida. Tara's mother, Patty Dole, identifies the girl in the photo as her daughter, Tara Calico. The boy in the photo was believed to be Michael Henley, a 9-year-old who had disappeared from a camping trip with his family in the Zuni Mountains, located in northwest New Mexico, around 75 miles from where Tara disappeared. Over the course of the next 20 years, more photos are discovered, a body is found, and a New Mexico sheriff makes a startling claim that throws the entire case into chaos. What really happened? And is Tara Calico the girl in the photo? This is the Trace Evidence Podcast, Episode 2, The Vanishing of Tara Calico. Welcome to the Trace Evidence Podcast. I'm your host, Stephen Pacheco. Before getting into today's episode, I wanted to give a warm thanks to those of you who listened to Episode 1, especially those of you who have been kind enough to reach out and send emails and join the Facebook group. You can find the group on Facebook by searching for Trace Evidence Podcast. Your request to join will be approved as soon as possible. The group itself is only closed so that you can post your thoughts without them showing up on the timelines of your friends and family. In addition to Facebook, you can reach out with comments, thoughts, or to suggest a case for me to cover. I can be reached at traceevidencepod@gmail.com. That's traceevidencepod@gmail.com. If you've enjoyed this show so far and are looking forward to more, please remember to comment and rate us on iTunes. A 5-star rating goes a long way to getting the podcast exposure, and in turn, bringing more attention to these cases. Once again, I thank you for listening and look forward to hearing from you. Your involvement in this process is a huge part of what drives me to make further episodes, and your thoughts, opinions, and case suggestions have the ability to steer the direction we go next. This podcast is designed to revolve around interaction. I listen to a great deal of true crime podcasts, but I find the ones that are more open to discussion and listener involvement truly grab my attention. Many of the cases I've learned about over the years stick in my head, and to be able to discuss them with like-minded people, to discuss theories and evidence, helps settle the voices that come creeping in at night. One last note before getting into today's episode. I think people sometimes forget what these cases are all about, and I admit I've been guilty of that myself. At their core, these are the stories of people. Innocent people, threatening people, dangerous people, people like me and you. There are those who are victims of a terrible crime, those who have perpetrated the crime, and those who are left behind who have to live with the aftermath every day for the rest of their lives. Parents who have lost children, children who have lost parents, siblings and spouses, friends and neighbors alike, whose lives have been changed forever by the trauma of abduction, the menace of murder, the chaos of lies and rumor. We mustn't get caught up in the dramatization of things, but instead work to find the answers that fill in the gaping blanks. Voltaire famously said, "To the living we owe respect, but to the dead we owe only truth." I think the living could use some truth as well, and it's in that spirit that the Trace Evidence Podcast was born. Today's episode focuses on one of the more widely covered disappearances of the last 30 years. I heard about the disappearance of Tara Calico when I was a kid. This was one of the first missing persons cases that was ever brought to my attention, next to the abduction and murder of Adam Walsh. Tara Calico was, and to a degree still is, one of those names parents use to punctuate a point about the dangers of the world around us. Tara's disappearance is mired in speculation, rumor, and a great deal of myth which has been built up over the years. Sometimes, an incident so terrible occurs that it takes on a life of its own and continues growing to the point where fact and fiction become blurred. In the case of Tara Calico, getting down to the real truth of what happened may be an impossible task, but it's important to separate legend from reality. Many of you have probably heard of this case, maybe even researched it or listened to shows about it in the past. I know I have. But when I sat down and began digging into the details, I discovered information I'd never heard before. Information that has been able to illuminate the harsh reality of what likely did and did not happen. Information about Tara's disappearance is voluminous, and you can easily find it in books, documentaries, podcasts, and online forums. However, beneath the glossy headlines and beyond the mirth of speculation and rumor, there exists a cold truth that needs to be brought into focus. This is the Trace Evidence Podcast, Episode 2, The Unexplained Disappearance of Tara Calico. Tara Calico was described as a neat, organized, and independent young woman. She was very active and enjoyed running and cycling. She had graduated from Belen High School and was enrolled as a sophomore at the University of New Mexico at Valencia. She held a strong grade point average and had ambitions of going into the fields of psychology or psychiatry. Tara had a habit of scheduling out her days, making lists of the planned activities and finding ways to squeeze in as much as she could. One of the first activities in Tara's daily routine was a 36-mile round-trip bike ride. This is a large distance to cover, but for an experienced and active person such as Tara, the entire trip could be completed in as little as 4 to 5 hours. The morning of September 20th, 1988 was yet another day Tara had scheduled out for herself. She had hoped to get in her morning ride, but was apparently running late, having not left the house until nearly 9:30 a.m. and having plans to play tennis with her boyfriend at 12:30 and a class to attend at 4 p.m., Tara asked her mother to come pick her up if she wasn't home by 12 p.m. Tara left her house on Brug Street in Belen, New Mexico, on her mother's bike. Her own bike had a flat tire, so she hopped on her mom's bright pink Huffy with yellow control cables and headed out towards Highway 47, which made up the majority of her long ride. At 12 p.m., Tara's mother, Patty Dole, noted that Tara had not yet arrived home, and at 12:05 was on her way driving down Highway 47 to pick up Tara and bring her home as she had requested. Patty became worried when she made the full trip down Highway 47, but failed to spot Tara anywhere along the route. Patty had occasionally accompanied Tara on the bike rides, and knew the route well. Patty hadn't taken the trip with Tara in a while, having felt that a motorist in the area had stalked them on at least one occasion. Disturbed by this, Patty suggested that Tara carry Mace with her, but Tara allegedly felt her mother was simply being overprotective and chose not to bring the Mace on her trek. Deeply troubled now, and with the possible stalking experience in her head, Patty looked again for Tara, but when she once again could find no sign of her daughter, Patty contacted the police. Police began with a sweep of the area, searching for any clues as to Tara's whereabouts. Witnesses reported seeing Tara riding along Highway 47, but for the most part didn't notice anything out of the ordinary. A few witnesses, however, stated that they had seen a dirty white or light gray 1953 Ford pickup with a white handmade shell following Calico during her ride. Calico appeared to be unaware of the truck's presence, although she was wearing headphones and listening to cassettes on her Walkman, which would have inhibited her ability to hear the vehicle. The last witness spotted Tara at 11:45 a.m. in Valencia County, approximately 2 miles from her home. Outside of the statements of a few witnesses in relation to the Ford pickup, the police did not find any evidence to suggest foul play, nor did they find any trace of Tara or her bike. The following day, Patty returned to Highway 47, traveling up and down, searching for any indication of where Tara could be. It was then that Patty discovered a Boston cassette tape that belonged to Tara. The cassette was located 3 miles from her home, and on the side of the road Tara would be if she were heading away from home. There were reportedly bike tracks and skid marks located near where the cassette tape was located, suggesting the possibility that Tara, a motorist, or both had come to sharp stops near one another. Sometime later, local police made another discovery of evidence. 19 miles east of Highway 47, near the John F. Kennedy campground, part of Tara's Sony Walkman was recovered. Police couldn't officially link the Walkman to a case of foul play, as it was possible Tara had dropped it and it had been found by someone else who had brought it to that area. In addition, it is not mentioned whether or not there were particular marks or signs on it that could make it 100% certain that the Walkman had in fact belonged to Tara. Sony Walkmans were a popular item in the late 1980s. However, Patty Dole identified the Walkman as being Tara's and strongly believed that Tara had left both the cassette tape and Walkman as items to mark her trail and aid in her recovery. Given all of the evidence, police believe that Tara's disappearance was as a result of foul play and that she had been abducted. Searches of the area failed to locate the Ford pickup that had been described by witnesses. After several weeks of intense scrutiny, the case began to grow cold, until a strange incident brought Tara's name back into the headlines. 9 months after Tara's disappearance, on June 15, 1989, in Port St. Joe, Florida, a Polaroid photo was found in a parking lot. The photo showed two unidentified people, a late teens to early 20s girl, and a boy no older than 13, bound and gagged with tape over their mouths. In the photo, the boy is laid on his side, head on a pillow, arms behind his back. The girl is on her back, hands bound underneath her. They appear to be laying on sheets in a dark space, with light coming in from the direction of the person holding the camera. The woman who found the photo stated that in the space where the photo had been found, there had been a white, windowless Toyota cargo van driven by a man with a mustache, believed to be in his early 30s. Police attempted to locate the vehicle, setting up roadblocks and doing safety checks, but neither the man nor the van were ever found. Police contacted Polaroid, who examined the photo and stated that it had to have been taken after May of 1989, just 1 month prior, as the particular film used was not available prior to that date. The photo caused quite a stir and garnered media attention. Several news stations broadcast the image in hopes of identifying the victims. In July of 1989, the photo appeared in a news report on the television show A Current Affair. A friend of Patty Dole's had been watching and showed it to Patty, who immediately identified the girl as her daughter, Tara Calico. In addition to the identification of Tara, relatives of Michael Henley, a 9-year-old boy who had gone missing on a camping trip in the Zuni Mountains in northwest New Mexico in April of 1988, identified the boy as Michael. After meeting with police, both the parents of Michael Henley, as well as Patty Dole, felt strongly convinced that the photo depicted their missing children. Dole stated that despite time, growth, and lack of makeup, she was certain that the girl was Tara. She noted the scar on the girl's leg, which appeared to be identical to one Tara had received in a car accident. In the photo, there's a book resting cover side up mere inches from the girl's arm. The book is My Sweet Audrina, written by V.C. Andrews, which Patty claimed was one of Tara's favorite books. Scotland Yard used their lab to analyze the photo, and concluded that the woman depicted was in fact Tara Calico. However, a second analysis was conducted at the Los Alamos National Laboratory, and concluded that it was not Tara. The FBI ran an analysis of the photo, but their results were inconclusive. What is known about the photo for certain is that it was taken in the back of a cargo van, much like the one the witness stated had been parked in the space where the photo was found, and that on the spine of the V.C. Andrews book, there appears to be a phone number written. However, due to the low quality of the photo, the number cannot be determined. Several of the digits are indiscernible, and police have stated that there are 300 possible numbers to fit, only 57 of which are active numbers. In the wake of the discovery of the photo, local police canvassed the area and found several witnesses who stated that they had seen the girl in the photo walking along the beach in Port St. Joe before the photo was found. These witnesses stated that the girl was seen in the company of several adult male Caucasians, who appeared to be ordering her around. Ultimately, the photo drummed up media attention in the case of the missing Tara Calico, but no certainties could be garnered from it. Outside of the scar on her leg, analysis showed that the girl in the picture shared a similar hairline with Tara, and that the ears are alike. It is unknown as to whether the boy and girl depicted are in fact victims, or if the photo itself was staged as some sort of sick joke. Although the photo brought renewed interest, it was short-lived, and as had happened nearly a year earlier, the case of Tara Calico began to grow cold. In 1990, The identification of the boy was once again called into question. The body of Michael Henley, the boy who had disappeared while camping and who had previously been identified as possibly being depicted in the photo, was found about 7 miles from the campsite he had originally vanished from. The campsite itself was located 75 miles from where Tara had last been seen. Police recovered Michael's remains, and it was determined that he had likely wandered off and perished from exposure. With Michael Henley being identified, police ruled him out as a possibility for the boy in the photo. Tara, however, remains the subject of rumor and speculation in relation to the photo. Whether or not it is Tara cannot completely be determined. Outside of intermittent sightings and unverifiable reports, the case of Tara Calico would grow cold for the next 20 years, until Port St. Joe Police Chief David Barnes received 2 letters. The letters, postmarked June 10th and August 10th, 2009, came by way of Albuquerque, New Mexico, and contained odd photos. The first letter had a photo of a boy, printed on copy paper, with a black, tape-like band drawn over his mouth in ink, similar to the depiction of the boy in the 1989 photo. The second letter contained an original photo of the boy. On August 12th, the Star newspaper in Port St. Joe received a 3rd letter, also from Albuquerque and also postmarked August 10th, depicting the same boy with tape drawn over his mouth. Whether or not the photos have a link to the Polaroid are unknown, although the New Mexico connection was enough to interest police in a possible link to Tara Calico. Oddly, at the same time the photos were arriving, a self-proclaimed psychic claimed to have known a girl she believed to be Tara Calico during her time in California. According to the woman, she had worked in a strip club with a woman who was eventually murdered, and since her death, she'd been having dreams that the woman was Tara Calico. She believed the woman to be buried in California, but searches were unable to produce any evidence to support the woman's claims. The photos of the boy were sent to the FBI in hopes of finding DNA or fingerprint evidence. In the case of Tara Calico, photos seem to keep appearing that bring more questions than answers. I have found statements relating to several other photos being in police custody that have never been released to the public. There is supposedly a Polaroid made on film that wasn't available until June 1989. The photo was found near a residential construction site in Montecito, California, and shows a girl's face with her mouth covered by duct tape. The image is blurry, but Patty Dole stated that she thought the girl in the photo could be her daughter. The girl in the image has a cowlick on her right temple and a lazy eye, both key features of Tara Calico. The girl's head appears to be resting on a blue-striped fabric, similar to the pillow depicted in the original 1989 Polaroid. Another photograph, shot on film not available until February 1990, depicts a young woman, loosely bound in gauze, with gauze over her eyes and black-framed glasses. There is a man sitting next to her, and they appear to be passengers on an Amtrak train. Patty could not identify this image as being that of her daughter, and thought perhaps the photo itself was a cruel prank. Tara's sister stated, quote, "They had a striking, uncommon resemblance. As for me, I will not rule them out. But keep in mind, our family has had to identify many other photographs, and all but these 3 were ruled out." End quote. Around the time of the letters being sent to Port St. Joe Police Chief David Barnes, law enforcement officials in New Mexico had new information in regard to Tara's case. Valencia County Sheriff Rene Rivera claimed that he possessed information which could solve the case. According to Rivera, 2 teenage boys had been driving by when they saw Tara and began harassing her. It is alleged that during this harassment, the boys accidentally struck Tara with their vehicle. Investigators believe that the boys then took Tara from the scene of the accident and panicked when Tara threatened to go to the police. The boys allegedly murdered Tara as a result of their panic, and authorities believed that Tara's body was buried in the general area of where she had been riding her bike. According to the sheriff, several individuals may have been involved in covering up the crime. Regardless of this information, no suspects were publicly identified, no arrests were made, and no sources were given as to where this information came from. In October of 2013, 25 years after Tara's disappearance, a 6-person task force was assembled to reinvestigate. The task force was comprised of agents from Federal Homeland Security, the New Mexico State Police, the Valencia County Sheriff's Department, the Albuquerque Sheriff's Department, and the Bernalillo County Sheriff's Department. Despite public statements of their intent to reinvestigate and media coverage of the task force, no new information was publicly released. However, in researching deeper into this task force, I was able to find official documents released through public records requests, which both shine light onto the case, as well as providing probable background information that supports the statements made by Sheriff Rene Rivera regarding the boys striking Tara with their vehicle and ultimately murdering her. The information contained in these records is dense, and quite frankly, disturbing. I will cover some of the details revealed in these reports, as well as making the link to them available on the Trace Evidence Facebook page for those of you who want to read them in full, but I must warn you, some of this information is upsetting. In totality, the police reports released through the public records request total 22 pages. The first report is dated April 18, 1997. It lists three brothers as suspects and Tara Calico as the victim. In part, the report reads, quote, "On April 18, 1997, I received information from Agent Robert Avalusia regarding the location of a possible gravesite containing the body of a missing female," end quote. The report is listed as processed on May 7, 1997, and closed on May 17, 1998. There is little else to this report. I have chosen not to name the suspects, being that no charges have been filed in this case. However, the names are available on the document itself. The second report, dated April 15, 2010, is filed by the New Mexico State Police and lists Tara Calico as a missing person. The report attempts to document Officer J. Blakeney's joint investigation with the Valencia County Sheriff's Office regarding the disappearance of Tara Calico. In the report, it is stated that a documentary filmmaker who had gone to school with Tara was in the area hoping to produce a film about the case. In the process of researching her film, the woman stated that she had been followed and feared that she could be in danger. She requested that the state police offer assistance to the Valencia County Sheriff's Department in regard to the disappearance of Tara Calico. A joint meeting was held, and as stated in the report, quote, "Sheriff Rivera and Captain Dongs advised us that the Valencia County Sheriff's Office has conducted a thorough investigation into the disappearance of Tara Calico and have identified three possible suspects, and one of the three suspects is now deceased. Sheriff Rivera advised us that they had received information regarding the whereabouts of Miss Calico's body. Investigators were unsuccessful in locating any evidence of Miss Calico at this location," end quote. Officer Blakeney is advised further that the FBI had been involved and that they are in possession of a thick case file on Tara Calico. Blakeney contacts the FBI, requesting to review their files, and is told that he may, although no copies were allowed to be made. According to Blakeney's report, quote, "I reviewed Volume 1 of the FBI case file, which included the elimination of possible leads, a photograph of an unidentified female and male inside an unknown van in Florida, and the investigation into identifying the unknown van," end quote. Following his review of the FBI files, Blakeney met with the district attorney to discuss the case. District Attorney Ron Lopez of Belen, New Mexico, informed Blakeney that without a body or a confession, he wasn't interested in pursuing the case, as it had been brought to him many times before but lacked credible evidence for prosecution. At this time, Blakeney met with the documentary filmmaker, who informed him that she had been told someone had put a hit out on her. She informed Officer Blakeney that she had information about a new location where Tara's body might be found. However, this information all came from people she had been hanging out with or partying with over the past 20 years, and Officer Blakeney felt this kind of hearsay evidence wouldn't be enough for him to move forward. At this point, on August 23, 2010, Officer Blakeney is contacted by a sergeant and lieutenant of the New Mexico State Police, who advise him that the Valencia County Sheriff's Department is the lead on the case of Tara Calico, and that he is not to conduct further investigation into the case unless so requested by the Valencia Sheriff's Department. Officer Blakeney is not contacted by the Valencia Sheriff's Department, and his involvement in this case ceases. The next report, dated October 2, 2013, is filed by Officer Richard Williamson and documents his involvement with the aforementioned task force. The report is followed by one dated November 6, 2013, and discusses an interview with former Valencia County Sheriff's Deputy Frank Mathola. In his interview, Frank Mathola states that during his time with the Sheriff's Department, he had followed up on leads in relation to the disappearance of Tara Calico. Among those leads was an interview he conducted where a man who was ill and dying told Mottola he wanted to get something off of his chest before he passed away. According to the witness interviewed by Mottola, several people who he used to hang out with told him that they had murdered Tara Calico. According to the report, quote, "They all knew she rode her bike up and down the highway. They explained that they hit her with the truck and put her in the back, and then took her out to the gravel pits where they sodomized and raped her. Tara reportedly got, quote, ballsy, and said she was going to make sure they all went to jail. At this point, one of the assailants retrieved a knife from his truck while the others held her down. He then proceeded to stab Tara to death. Her body was hidden in a nearby bush, but when the search for her began, they got nervous and picked up her body." End quote. According to this witness, her body was then buried in the basement in which many of the parties they held took place. Of the suspects named by the witness, one happened to be the son of the former sheriff. When asked about this, Mottola stated that the witness had said, quote, "His dad hired Deputy Rivera, and that Deputy Rivera had their back," end quote. The witness also said, quote, "Your sheriff there is not so innocent," end quote. The witness further stated that Tara's bike had not been discovered because it had been taken to a dump nearby shortly after the murder. In addition to this, the witness claimed one of the assailants had an interest in Tara previously and was upset that Tara did not reciprocate. Deputy Mottola recorded this conversation on his department-issued tape recorder, and not knowing who was the lead on the case, contacted Sheriff Rivera. Rivera told Mottola to bring him everything he had right away. Deputy Mottola tagged his tape in evidence and reported to Sheriff Rivera. Deputy Mottola further stated that when he was later contacted by the documentary filmmaker, she informed him that there was a record of his report and of the recording, but neither the report nor the tape could be located in evidence. Following up on his interview, Deputy Mottola had spoken to an individual in regard to the location of where the body might be. He said this individual told him that Sheriff Rivera had investigated the suicide of one of the suspects, and that this suspect had left a note confessing to his part in the murder of Tara Calico. That note, however, was never placed in evidence and cannot be located nor proven to have ever existed. Later in the interview, Deputy Mottola is asked about his relationship with Rivera. Quote, "We asked Mr. Mottola about how his report was treated and did it affect his job. Mr. Mottola said he got into a disagreement with Sheriff Rivera when he arrested a Mexican national and was told by the Mexican national that he worked for Rivera. Mr. Mottola said he got a call from Sheriff Rivera and was told that the Mexican national worked for him and that he needed to let him go. Mr. Mottola said he had already turned him over to immigration. Mr. Mottola said after this incident, he was removed from all assignments he had been on, and after numerous write-ups, Mr. Mottola said he resigned from the department." End quote. In conclusion, Mr. Mottola stated that during the course of his investigation, he heard the names of three suspects repeatedly, but could not obtain hard evidence against them. Another report, dated December 23, 2013, lists the details of an interview conducted with the person who claimed to know the men who had murdered Tara Calico. According to this witness, one of the individuals was a heavy drug user, and had informed him that, at night, the ghost of Tara Calico came to him and asked him why he helped murder her. According to the witness, the suspects stated that they had buried her body by the Green Lagoons by the rock quarry on top of the West Mesa. This witness, however, rambles on about many contradictory details and stories so much during the interview, it's very hard to tell what is truth and what is fiction. Following the interview, this witness then placed phone calls to several people whose names he dropped and tells them that the police are investigating them. One piece of information from this interview, however, that seems to relate to the interview conducted by former Sheriff's Deputy Frank Mottola focused on the possible cover-up in relation to Sheriff Rene Rivera. When asked about the previous sheriff, Lawrence Romero Sr., the witness stated, quote, "He is dirty and has always been dirty, just like Rene Rivera," end quote. The final report, dated August 6, 2014, is a summary of evidence compiled by the task force, written by Officer Richard Williamson, as he is transferring to Santa Fe. In part, the report states, quote, "The task force has since been closed due to lack of any viable leads developed, and my involvement has ended in December of 2013, end quote. The report ends simply with, quote, "This case is closed," end quote. Buried somewhere between the lines of police reports, the accusations and theories of so-called witnesses and friends of friends, behind the lens of a documentary filmmaker, or in the disturbing Polaroids floating around in parking lots and in police evidence lockers, the truth of what happened to Tara Calico exists. It has been 29 years since Tara vanished from Highway 47 in Belen, New Mexico. Tara's mother, Patty, and her stepfather continued living in the same house Tara had lived in for 15 years after she disappeared. Eventually, when the pain of an empty room and unanswered questions became too much to deal with, they moved to Florida, where, sadly, in 2006, Patty passed away, never having learned the truth about her daughter. Tara's stepfather and siblings remain, and for them, her case will never be closed until they finally find out the truth. The more you dig into this case, the thicker and harder to navigate it becomes. Somewhere, someone knows exactly what happened to Tara Calico. We can only hope that sooner or later, the truth will finally be revealed. The disappearance of Tara Calico is a haunting one. The idea that a 19-year-old girl can disappear on the side of a busy state road in broad daylight is frightening. At the beginning, it does seem like a possible abduction. However, as I dug deeper, it began to seem more likely that this was more about rape and murder than abduction itself. One thing about this case which has always bothered me is the idea that Tara's mother stopped riding with her because she felt they were being stalked by a motorist. I wish I could get more details about this, but it's just one of those vague statements that appear in the details of the case. Maybe Tara's mother convinced herself she was just being overprotective, but typically when you feel worried or disturbed by something, it's best to trust your instincts. The Polaroid photo found in Florida has been floating around the internet for years. I don't claim to be a photographic expert, but when I look at the photo, I just don't see Tara Calico. She looks similar, but if I had to give a sworn statement, I'd have to say that I don't think the picture shows Tara. The picture itself's full of controversy, and although it does seem to depict something sick and twisted, it could just as easily be a sick prank. I don't blame Tara's mother for identifying her in the photo, and frankly, Patty Dole knew her daughter better than any of us ever will, but I also have to factor in the desperation of a grieving parent. At the end of the day, I have to lean towards the idea that the photo simply doesn't show Tara Calico. The letters that were sent to the police chief in Port St. Joe, Florida are interesting, but little details available. The text of the letters, even the photos themselves, are not available to the public. The fact that they originate from New Mexico adds some credence to them, but there really isn't enough information to go on, and unfortunately, many sick individuals do things like this for attention or just for their own entertainment. I do think it was unwise of Sheriff Rivera to come out publicly and claim to know what happened to Tara without possessing any real evidence in relation to it, at least none that he would show publicly. It seems to have caused undue pain to her family, as well as tainting further investigations. The task force was a good idea, but despite media coverage and their hopeful interest in solving the case, they never publicly said much about it. It seems that, according to the reports, they had a very good idea about what happened, but not enough evidence to make it stick. Although it seems that all the suspects had passed away by the end of the task force, and thus, it'd be impossible to gain a confession or be led to a body either way. I've heard about the Tara Calico case for a long time. I've heard podcasts, I've watched videos, I've read forums, I've done research. Despite all of that, it was my research for this episode that first introduced me to the police reports in the public records request. I'm sure other people are aware of these, or maybe they weren't. But it seems strange to me that the story of Tara Calico is tragic enough to elicit interest when it's a disappearance. But people seem less drawn to it when it becomes possible, even likely, that she may have been murdered by a couple of guys she knew and who were out looking for trouble. There's a lot in the reports about the possibility of a cover-up involving Sheriff Rivera, but it's really hard to know if these statements hold water. I do think it's most likely that, as the reports suggest, Tara was murdered. But there's no way to know for sure. Simply reading a report doesn't tell me whether or not the witness is reliable, and although it isn't unheard of for a police officer to be dirty, there's no way to know the true reliability of any of these witnesses. Even former Deputy Mathola can't be fully depended on here, as he resigned due to issues with Rivera, and as such, it's totally possible that he has an axe to grind. I'm not saying that he does, but this is a possibility that has to be considered. I don't know for sure, but there are too many holes in this to stake a claim on it. From everything I've read, heard, and seen, the disappearance of Tara Calico remains a very tragic story. If she was abducted, it's been nearly 30 years, and although it's possible, it's unlikely that she will turn up. If in fact she was murdered the day she vanished, outside of some stroke of luck, it seems unlikely that her remains will be located. Sadly, we may never know the truth about what happened to Tara Calico. If you're interested in finding more information about the disappearance of Tara Calico, there are several online forums that discuss this case. A quick Google search of Tara Calico will bring up several different sites where you can explore the case further. There are also links to further information on the Tara Calico case posted on our Facebook group, including direct links to the New Mexico State Police reports from which I quoted. The Facebook group can be found simply by searching for Trace Evidence Podcast. Another page which was a powerful resource for this episode was Tara Calico's listing on the Charlie Project. If you haven't heard of it, the Charlie Project is a nonprofit which lists information on missing persons. It is very detailed and a helpful database that I would highly recommend you visit. If you have information about what happened to Tara Calico, please contact the Valencia County Sheriff's Department or the FBI office in Albuquerque, New Mexico. For now, that was the case of Tara Calico. I want to thank you for listening to this episode of the Trace Evidence Podcast and invite you to join our Facebook group. Simply search for Trace Evidence Podcast on Facebook. Let us know how you found the podcast and what you'd like to hear in the future. In addition to joining the Facebook group, you can contact me with questions, comments, or case suggestions at traceevidencepod@gmail.com. That's traceevidencepod@gmail.com. I'm always eager to hear your feedback. If you enjoyed this episode, please give us a good rating on iTunes and leave us a review. This will greatly help our reach and bring more attention to the cases we cover. In addition to iTunes, the Trace Evidence Podcast is now available on Stitcher and Pocket Casts. Just search for Trace Evidence. You can also follow the podcast on Twitter at TraceEvPod. That's TraceEvPod. If you have theories or ideas relating to the disappearance of Tara Calico, tweet at me, post in the Facebook group, or email me directly. Thanks for listening, and I'll hope you join us for the next episode of Trace Evidence.